I think I have more notes on the novel and fascism than I do on the movie.
I did some research, and I have to say that I did not end up with a very well-defined perspective on what Heinlein's original intent was.
Nor Verhoeven's.
Yeah, exactly. Save it!
Hey everybody, welcome to the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marks, and Colin. Guys, I don't know about you, but I'm going to say that the movie we're here to discuss today is, it's in my top five for Casper Van Diem. How about you guys?
It's close. It might be top 10 for me.
Top 10.
Casper Van Diem, Mr. Straight to Video.
Oh my goodness. He didn't have a good career, and we know why.
I probably shouldn't be taking a shot right off the front. I mean, he could probably pick me up and break me over his chin.
We don't know why Ava Green didn't have a better career. We definitely know why Casper Van Diem did not.
All right, well, before we get rolling, we'd love to get some feedback. Visit our website at realdmc.com. And you can also send us a message at feedback@realdmc.com or find us on Twitter @realdmc. Let us know how we're doing. And as always, you can let us know why Colin sucks.
Keeping it real.
Real sucky.
The film we're here to discuss today is quite a movie, I'll say that. Directed by Paul Verhoeven, the completely misunderstood satire, 1997's Starship Troopers.
In every age, there is a cause worth fighting for. But in the future, the greatest threat to our survival will not be man at all.
Hey, kid, what's going on? War! We're going to war!
Now the youth of tomorrow must travel across the stars to defend our world.
We are a generation commanded by fate to defend humankind.
Everyone fights, no one quits.
We are going in with first wave. You smash the entire area. You kill anything that has more than two legs. You get me?
We get you, sir!
But they will face an enemy more devastating than any ever imagined.
To the top!
TriStar Pictures takes you to the front lines of the next frontier.
Kill them all!
Starship Troopers.
Come on, you apes!
Before we start, I just want to get some clarification. Is this podcast supposed to be a satire or not?
This podcast is not a satire. And as compared to my attempt to have a take on skyscrapers being a satire, this movie genuinely is a satire. Skyscraper doesn't even compare.
This podcast is not intended to be a satire.
No.
We'll let the audience decide how it ends up. Yeah.
By the way, I reframed my skyscraper thoughts. If I said it was firmly tongue-in-cheek, does that work for you?
No, not really.
Oh, fuck it. I'm never gonna move you guys on this skyscraper argument, so we'll move on.
They miss. I understand your view, but I don't think it's
right.
Accurate to what I perceive the movie as. I think they just miss. I think he was trying to make a serious action movie, and it didn't work.
Okay, well, maybe we can shift our focus to this film by way of general introduction. So the movie does maintain a 7.2 rating on the IMDb.
Wow, strong.
I was rather surprised by that when I saw that. I was expecting maybe like a 6.4, 6.5.
I have this movie in my top 238, so it definitely is one of my favorite films of all time. And I haven't watched it in quite a long time. It's more a fond memory of the movie. It's not a good movie, but it's definitely a very, very fun movie.
I love this movie. It's not a good movie.
It's not like a hard science fiction movie, but it's definitely a very fun action movie.
Well, I said this movie is misunderstood, and one of the reasons why I'm surprised by the rating is because I don't think people are rating this film based on the irony or the satire. I think they're rating it as a straight up action movie, sci-fi.
I agree. I completely agree.
This movie definitely has been, reappreciated over time, or reevaluated, or the scope and the intent of the movie. I think people are now more bought into what Verhoeven was actually trying to do in terms of the satire versus where it started originally.
Yes, I agree. That doesn't really, I think, explain its popularity.
No, and that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So there's a really interesting article in The Atlantic by Caleb Marsh, and he kind of goes through the updated interpretation of this movie. One of the quotes is, The fact that it was and continues to be taken at face value speaks to the very vapidity that the movie skewers. He's basically saying that people still don't understand that this movie's trying to make fun of fascism and good-looking actors and the Aryan race and the Third Reich, and it's all there, but people still don't get it.
Yeah, by the way, that's Callum Marsh.
Thank you.
Yeah, I read some of that article, and yeah, he basically called the film a satire, a ruthlessly funny and keenly self-aware send-up of right-wing militarism that critiques the military-industrial complex, the jingoism of American foreign policy, and a culture that privileges reactionary violence over sensitivity and reason. And I think he nailed it on the head there. And I think that also is sort of why this movie does have such a high rating, because unfortunately, for the wrong reasons, I think it really resonates with like right. half this country.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Well, and in terms of the original release, this was a commercial failure. In fact, for a long time, this was one of those films that got wrapped into, you know, the biggest bombs of all time. It had a budget of $105 million. It actually ended up making $54 million at the U.S. box office. So it came in at number 34 for the year, just behind Spawn, and then in front of Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery. But that movie was split over 2 years because it was a huge success.
Yet it still spun off 4 sequels.
All direct-to-video sequels, though. I don't think there was never a theatrical sequel.
Well, somebody had to give Casper Van Dien some work.
Right. Yeah. Well, if you want to see an interesting movie, as I was doing research on this, I found a movie that Casper did that is called Star Raiders. Doesn't look good, let me say that. So.
The original Heinlein novel, like he's a much more serious science fiction author, real science fiction and very thoughtful and very provoking.
Very hard sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly. And I was wondering if the initial reviews expected this to be more, oh, you're redoing a Heinlein book. We expect it to have this sort of flavor to it. And it was not that at all. So I wonder if that was the initial reaction.
Well, I can give you my initial reaction because I've read the book a couple times. I'm a huge Robert Heinlein fan. I was expecting the novel when I went in to watch this movie. And the novel is not what I got. I mean, very, very broad strokes.
Yeah.
But this was not it. I was like, what the hell is this thing?
Well, let me actually throw a quote at you. Keith Langston on Screen Rant summarized the movie by saying, Verhoeven's choices immediately alienated and angered fans of Heinlein and confused critics who were expecting a traditional book-to-movie adaptation. That was my experience with this movie. I remember really disliking this movie when I walked out. I was like, what the fuck was that?
I've seen this movie like many times. I don't know why, but I have. Because I think if you just...
It's a fun movie.
You just sort of have to go with it and just put all the notions around the Heinlein book just out of your mind and just sort of soak in the satire and the action and just... And then it's like, it's fun.
Well, I like this movie a lot more now watching it, understanding what Verhoeven's perspective was when he was making it.
I'm sort of surprised that I just never even really thought about it as a satire. I'm still not 100% convinced that it is, but it's more fun watching it that way.
Yeah, I think it's about 70% there on the satire. That would be about the scale I would give it.
And obviously the movie takes off on Full Metal Jacket in lots of ways, but it has a similar split of the boot camp section and the action section. And the boot camp's definitely pure satire. It's just filled with camp and goofiness and kind of fun. Whereas once they go into the evasion, it gets to be a little bit confused on like, okay, what? Are you trying satire? What points? Like I think he kind of loses his the message to some degree.
He firmly regains it at the end, let me tell you. When Neil Patrick Harris walks in, I'm like, oh, it's the Gestapo.
Doogie Himmler, right? That was that's the note in the IMDb trivia.
It's really kind of funny.
The one thing that's crazy to me is I guess I didn't realize, because I have seen RoboCop more recently than I had seen this. Like, I don't think I'd seen this movie. I think maybe I saw it twice because it was not a movie that I enjoyed, so I did not seek it out to rewatch it. But man, the tone of this movie and like how close this veers to RoboCop in terms of the future satire is crazy. And Ed Neumeier was screenwriter for both RoboCop and this film, so it makes sense that they're very similar in tone. But the commercials from RoboCop are dead on kind of aligned with the theme and the feel that you have on these the Federal Network video segments for this movie.
Oh, right. Yeah, I had sort of forgotten about that.
Oh, my gosh. It's dead on. It's
even the ending call, like, do you want to know more?
Yeah.
Is very similar to the calls out in RoboCop. So do you think RoboCop was a satire?
I don't think RoboCop was a satire per se, but it had a lot of satirical elements as they were mocking the society, right? I think you also had the execution, the televised execution on RoboCop.
All channels, 6 o'clock, all channels, yeah. All the time, whatever they, I forget the
end. Certainly all the commercials and the bad sitcom and all that, totally making fun, right? That's very satirical. But otherwise, I don't know. I think that was more of a straighter action movie than this.
I don't know. I think you're right. There's a lot of satirical elements in that movie, a lot more than I had remembered because I watched it about a year ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. Like, I understand this movie like on a lot deeper level now than when I first saw it as a, yeah, as like a teenager.
RoboCop's a great movie. We should probably do RoboCop at some point.
Yeah. You guys can do it.
I think we talked about it.
Yeah. 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 You guys do it. Yeah.
Is it 1984, 1985?
Well,
87.
One of those podcasts we did a long time ago.
I think it was 87.
So maybe we can talk about the... So, Colin, you're a big fan of the novel, so, and you have an opinion, I guess, in terms of what Heinlein was going for originally. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, so what are my thoughts about the book or the book in relation to the movie or what,
well, maybe what, let's take it, maybe we can take it step
what do you
by step.
Know?
So, yeah. Well, so do you think, what do you think Heinlein's intent was with the book itself? Do you think he was he mocking the military industrial complex, or was he in some way being slightly supportive?
No, I think that the themes of the book are militarism, sort of moral decline, but it's also like a sort of coming of age, right? And I think that the book does reflect a lot of his political views. I mean, he was in the military. He went to the Naval Academy. He was a naval officer for 5 years. So he was an officer in the 30s. I don't think he was ever in World War II. He graduated from the academy in like the late 20s, I think it was, because of his own experience. I think that he wanted to write about that and how discipline and training and the military can break you down and build you back up to be a better individual, and that militarism itself is a good thing, but not over militarization. I don't think he was pushing for that at all. The book itself is way, way, way more subtle and complicated than this version, this movie. This movie.
No, this
I'm not
is
sure
not,
subtle is the.
This movie is not subtle, dude. This movie is camp. I mean, this movie is very campy.
The book itself. There was controversy after it came out. He was accused of being a fascist, and he got a reputation as a fanatical, warmongering fascist because of this movie. And personally, I don't see it. I think that's all wrong. But apparently Verhoeven, he started reading the book, got a few chapters in, and got bored. So he just stopped reading it. But somebody, I think Ed Neumeier, the screenwriter, just told him what the book was about.
Right.
And he must have mentioned fascism, which Verhoeven, I think, probably immediately latched on to and said, like, I've got a great idea for this movie.
And Verhoeven did grow up in Nazi-occupied Holland, right?
Right, so he has all those experiences himself, right? And so it's perfect, but calling this movie Starship Troopers is a joke.
One of the reasons I was so disappointed when I walked out of this movie is I remember the opening, I think it's the opening of the book, where the guys are running in power armor, right? And they're jumping and they have these bomb racks on their back and they're dropping these bombs.
Yeah.
You're immediately kind of in this universe and the technology is kind of crazy and it's really interesting. And then the interpretation of this movie, which is just, you know, ground troops with really ineffective guns and they're just getting mowed down left and right, which is, I guess, one of the things that Verhoeven was going for. And this is, I guess, from a quote from Empire Magazine article. He wanted to have good-looking teenagers getting mowed down in droves. That was his intent for this movie.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, mission accomplished. You did it, dude. You stuck the landing on that one. What do you think about Verhoeven as a director?
Interesting.
I like Verhoeven as a director because I did, you know, RoboCop is a good movie. I really like Total Recall. And then this movie, it's a guilty pleasure. That being said, he pushes everything to the limit, I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just like nonstop. But like in this movie, the man has a thing for dismembered bodies. Let me just tell you.
And straight up, the dude loves violence.
He loves violence.
And he loves limbs, actually. Limbs and heads being removed from bodies, for sure. Yeah.
Burnt off, shot off.
Violence
whatever.
Is the supreme authority. Yeah, he just takes every little theme and just does it to 150%. It's just right. Crazy.
Marcus, any thoughts on Verhoeven?
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting director. Most of his movies are... like Colin was saying, they tend to be good movies, borderline great, but not necessarily for the reasons he's trying, or maybe in spite of himself. Like Starship Troopers especially, I'm not sure if this is the exact tone he was going for, if this is exactly what he wanted out of it. It ended up being a really, really fun movie. But some of the others, Total Recall has some of the similar kind of goofiness in it. But Total Recall and like some Basic Instinct, I think he's trying less message in the others. And this one, I think he's trying for some message and it didn't quite work.
Well, I'd say Total Recall and RoboCop for me are his two best movies.
Yeah. And Basic Instinct's really good.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Basic Instinct.
I haven't seen it in a while, so I don't know if it really is good or if I just remember it.
It is. I watched it again like last year.
It's funny because Basic Instinct is not like, that's not a movie that ever really stuck with me all that much.
Watch it again. It's actually... a great, great cheese fest. It is really? So, yeah, but well done. Like really, really well done. I like it. The whole relationship between Nick and I forget her name now.
Catherine.
This is a great performance by
Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone. Thank you.
Douglas.
Michael Douglas is fantastic.
George Zunda?
Well.
Who are you talking about here?
Zunda's fine. It's really good. You should watch it again. Think of it less as an erotic thriller and go in and sort of think about how sort of actually cheesy it is. And again, over the top, it's fun. Oh, Showgirl. We didn't even mention Showgirl.
I was just going to say that. He's also the director who brought us Showgirls, too. So
I think I've only seen Showgirls once.
That's one more time than I've seen.
That may be, we may need to watch that. Maybe we go on a little Verhoeven journey.
I have actually seen it at least twice, and I did watch it again somewhat recently. I think I was on a Verhoeven kick last year. That movie, it all leads up to Showgirls, his whole career.
Everything leads to Showgirls.
And he just knocks it out of the park. First of all, the brilliant casting decision of
Elizabeth Berkley.
Wow.
You know what? Honestly, I think we better veer out of the rabbit hole on this one. Maybe we should do Showgirls.
Yeah. David Fincher has his Mank, and Verhoeven has Showgirls.
What do you mean David Fincher has his Mank?
That's what his career has been building to. Like this is his like pinnacle movie that he's been wanting to achieve.
Have you seen Mank?
No.
It's really good.
I'm not knocking Mank.
Oh, okay. I get it.
In contrast.
All right. Well, you guys want to talk about the cast?
Let's do it.
Here's the interesting thing about this movie is that the secondary characters are all much more interesting and far better actors than the main characters.
This is absolutely true.
In particular, right? So Michael Ironside and Clancy Brown are awesome in this movie. They're just fun to watch because they kind of light up the screen. You have Casper Van Dien and Denise Richards as the two leads, which when this movie was being cast, that's one of the things when you read about this movie that they think impacted the financial performance because you didn't have a famous or big name actor that was anchoring the film. So I think actually Casper Van Dien, kind of as the movie goes on, his performance I actually think gets better a little bit. You know, he begins to own the Rico leadership thing a little bit towards the end on the planet. But holy shit, man, Denise Richards, her acting in this movie is horrible. In fact, she confuses acting with smiling, I think. I think 40% of this movie, she's got this big smile on her face, including moments where during the funeral, like Rico looks over her at the funeral and her response is big smile. Or, she has a bug leg through her body, big smile. I mean.
Yeah. When she breaks up with him so many times, it's just the worst. It's really bad.
I didn't realize how horrible her performance was in this movie until I saw it again.
Very, very flat. None of it works.
So
it's really bad.
The smile thing is you totally nailed it. And there's this one scene after they avoided the asteroid, they ended up like losing part of the ship, right? But they dodged it.
Right.
Somebody mentioned like, oh, we were lucky. And the captain goes, luck didn't have anything to do with it. We have a hell of a flight team. And then everyone is like smiling, especially Denise Richards. And I'm going like, why are you guys smiling? You just like lost part of the ship and all these crew.
What happened to the 45 people that were in compartment 12? Right? They're now dead.
But yeah, she, you know, I don't even think she kisses convincingly in this movie. During the dance scene, it was like, are you just like putting your face up against his or so? I don't understand it.
Yeah, at the beginning too, Rico comes over and he's like, oh yeah, parents have disowned me. I only have the clothes on my back. Her response, smile.
Yeah.
I know. What the fuck, man? We just lost Argentina. Smile. It's so wrong. The performance, the role does not match. It doesn't work at all. And maybe that's the intent. Maybe the fact that it doesn't work all the way through makes the movie, makes it a good performance or a good choice. But I don't think somebody told Denise Richards that she should go for camp. And I think she just pulled it off organically.
That was a question I had. Was this Verhoeven, like his goal? Did he instruct her to act this way? Or was it just he didn't care?
I think he just didn't care.
I think on day two, he's like, oh, I'm getting what I need out of this.
Yeah, so he was happy with what he did. Because I think she did a much better job in Wild Things.
Yeah, I would agree, actually.
Oh, we need to rewatch it. She's definitely way more terrible in this movie than I think she's been in anything else. And so was that intentional?
Well, she's just inappropriately animated in every scene, right? She's just like, everything's like, oh, big smile. And it's just strange.
Yeah.
You guys want to circle back on Casper Van Dien? The other thing, or the one thing I would highlight here is that I guess Mark Wahlberg, I don't know if he was offered the role, but he was strongly considered.
That would have been a good movie.
It would have been interesting.
Yeah, it would have been better. Like, I think anyone but Casper. He just does such a bad job with it. Like, his interactions with his parents never felt believable. Like, any of that stuff just really didn't.
Well,
he gets a slightly better when he's in combat, but still, it's very.
Yeah, I think he is better as the leadership role when he's given the speech to the Roughnecks, for example. I'm like, okay, that scene kind of works, but there's a whole bunch of other scenes that do not.
It feels like he's trying to mimic, and it's kind of what he is doing. He's trying to mimic Michael Ironside's character. Like, he was pretending.
He's like mature, number one. He's acting like an adult. He actually looks like an adult. I found the high school scenes really, really odd because they all look so old.
Everyone's like 26 or 27 in high school?
Yeah. It's just really odd.
We'll talk about that.
He's like 28 or something, right? At the filming of this movie?
I think so. I think... Yeah. Denise Richards is like 26, and it's just weird.
So you have Dina Meyer, so she plays Dizzy Flores, or Diz. She's better than Denise Richards, for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's one of the better actors in the movie.
I like Dina Meyer.
Although they give her some weird things to do, like the daggers in her eyes at the dance and other moments where she's just acting like she's maybe a little bit on meth, you know, where she's like over amped up. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I would agree that they didn't have the character done right, but I think it's less her fault, and I think it's more of the writing in that regard.
By the way, the other takeaway, if you'd asked me, oh, what do I remember about this movie when I first saw it, I would have said, oh, you know, Denise Richards is pretty hot. I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm more in the Dina Meyer camp after rewatching this movie.
Oh, for sure. This is the age-old question. Dina Meyer or Denise Richards?
I remember Plato contemplating that.
For years, I could never answer that question. Ask me one day, it was Denise. Ask me another day, it was Dina. I think, though, it falls on the Dina Meyer side.
Yeah, I'll go Dina.
Yeah.
So you have Jake Busey. So he shows up as Ace. I will say that I really do like Jake Busey. He has good charisma. He was fun to watch. I enjoyed him in this movie.
I'm sorry, but is he not one of the creepiest looking people you've ever seen?
Well, I think you're just basically focused on that because of Contact.
No, this movie too.
When you see his face. Well, you are right. Right. The scene in Contact where the camera hits him is like, he's going through.
Oh
like,
my God, that was like so creepy.
Yeah, that was well done, that moment. And I do think that he replicates that a little bit in one sequence where Diz and Rico are dancing, and he kind of comes up behind him, and he has the fiddle, and he has this like crazy look in his eyes.
Yep.
That's not particularly romantic, that moment. I think I would be running in terror if that face was right next to me.
He also got really excited for a violin, which I've never seen anyone that excited.
I have some questions about the violin.
What is up with the violin? Why is it like in all futuristic movies, you gotta like make stuff out of like clear plastic and add like some neon lights and shit?
Yeah, like, it's very strange.
I even had problems with the coffee cups they had on the ship, these clear glass coffee cups. It's like, why do like filmmakers always pull out the clear glass coffee cups in the future? Like, why is that like futuristic? I mean,
no, it's because the coffee cup is used as a way to detect the, you know, your current level, like based on your like, are you leaning or not? That's the point of the clear coffee cup.
Whatever. Always have an answer for something, don't you, Hovis? Yeah,
sure do. Patrick Muldoon, so he shows up as Xander. Again, better actor in the scenes that he's in with Denise and Casper. You look at this guy and they're like, okay, this guy's acting a little bit.
He could have been the lead and it would have been, he's probably a little too good looking maybe. I don't know.
Patrick Muldoon, what is that guy, like 35?
I know, yeah. That's the thing that's kind of funny. He's a trained ship navigator, pilot, whatever, and he plays for the Giants on that bounce ball game, whatever it is, on the side. What's going on here? I don't understand.
Was he in high school or like was he? I
thought he was like a high school kid.
From high school to being a flight instructor instantly.
No. I think he was just like paired with her. I don't think he was actually an instructor.
He was in uniform already. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. It was confusing.
It was very confusing.
And then two more people I'll just point out. So randomly, Rue McClanahan shows up as the blind biology teacher.
Blanche.
I had no idea that was her.
I neither did I. And first of all, when you look at Rue McClanahan and the outfit that they give her, like with the goggles, like why does everybody in the future wear dark goggles?
Oh my God.
She's blind.
It was awesome. She's dark black goggles, a white lab coat, and a black necktie, a cane, and a severely burned face. I mean, right. Like I was just expecting her to get, invited to like Xerxes' next orgy.
Exactly. She's very, putting off a weird vibe there, Rue. So you have Marshall Bell. So he shows up briefly as the general that is locked in he's locked himself in the cabinet. And the only thing is when you see that guy, I'm like, I immediately recognize him. Where do I recognize him from? And then I had to think for a second. I'm like, oh yeah, he's Quato from Total Recall.
I was expecting him to open his shirt.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. That's why I recognize this guy.
The only one I'll give my nod to is another on my Baltimore police squad is the Seth Gilliam in plays Sugar Watkins, and he sets from The Wire, of course.
Yes, Sergeant Carver.
Only other interesting thing to note that also shows up as trivia, Stephen Ford. So he's Lieutenant Willie. He's the actor who's yelling at people when they're on their way.
We are going in with first wave. These more bugs for us to kill. You smash the entire area. You kill anything that has more than two legs. You get me?
We get you, sir.
That is Gerald Ford's son.
Oh, wow. Who knew?
Wow.
I had no idea.
Are we not going to talk about Neil Patrick Harris?
So Neil Patrick Harris, who was probably the most well-known actor when this movie came out, he plays Doogie Himmler. So he is he is recruited into the SS division of whatever. What's this thing called? What's the organization?
Federal.
The Federal Service? Federal Force, or whatever it is.
Terran, United Terran, I don't know.
Yeah. And so...
So I just watched the movie. I don't know.
So he does have slight psychic abilities, apparently. The outfits that they put him in, he has the hat, he has the full leather trench coat. It is an SS uniform. In fact, Verhoeven specifically modeled it on the SS uniforms.
No, he's got like even an eagle like on the hat too and stuff.
Yeah, it looks goofy as shit, but it's fun. It's crazy to see Neil Patrick Harris in that outfit because it's such a weird combination.
By the end of the movie, it's what, like one, maybe 2 years after they graduated from high school.
And he's already made it.
He's already a colonel.
He's a colonel.
And you look at him, and they must have put some makeup on his face to darken his eyes and like make them deep set. And
the burden of leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did look aged.
Yeah, very, very much aged.
He was good though.
All right, anybody else in the cast you guys want to hit?
Clancy Brown, who's awesome. I mean, probably most well-known.
The Kurgan.
I have something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away.
He always reminds me of Biff from Back to the Future. I mean, it's not the same actor, but he definitely has that similarity.
Huh. Interesting. Never would have thought that.
Don't see that at all.
I recall...
Maybe not.
When this movie was in development, the word on the street was that Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to play Sergeant Zim. And I thought, oh my God, that's going to be like really cool. Of course... I didn't know what they're going to do with the movie.
Right.
That would have been a very weird casting if they had him in there.
I think it would have worked really well, actually.
I think he would have done fine, but like he's such a big name star for that's, like the role wasn't that big.
Yeah. And I don't remember what it was that why he didn't end up doing it, but I think Clancy Brown is a pretty damn good substitute.
Well, did you know that James Cameron was attached to direct this at one point?
Oh my God. Yeah. It would have actually been.
Well, that would have been a good movie. That would have been, but it would have been like Aliens, right? Like it's a similar.
That's probably why he didn't do it, right? Because it was way too similar to that.
He would have made it as a straight adaptation or adaptation of the book, I think.
Also, I felt like the movie did try to rip off Aliens in numerous parts.
The guns look like the M41A pulse rifle. They look like an extended version of that.
Except in the typical Verhoeven manner, he had to outdo them, and he made them even bigger, which is why they're very unwieldy, and nobody could actually shoot straight.
I was going to say, they look like the most ineffective weapon ever, and it looks like everyone's about to fall over holding it. I mean, it's just so weird looking.
And shoot their comrades
in the head.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
All right, Marcus, plot summary.
Humans in a fascist militaristic future wage war with giant alien bugs. It's an ugly planet. It's a bug planet.
All right, well, you guys ready to jump into this thing?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Film opens with the montage of the Federal Network. The citizens are watching this Federal Network and what they're seeing on that. They use that as a way to deliver some exposition. In this case, it's actually based on the Triumph of the Will. So Verhoeven specifically opened it up and to have some similarities between this and the Nazi propaganda film. And one of the things I do like in the beginning is they're giving this baseline exposition that bugs are out there and they're enemies. And then they show this picture of a universe and there's a "you are here" that circles for the Earth. I did like that.
By the way, Klondathu was on the completely opposite side of the galaxy from Earth. Right.
That would take so long to get there.
Was it like 79 years of warp speed or whatever to get there?
No, I don't buy that at all.
The other thing you do see here is, so Mark has referenced it, they cut to a report of the Klondathu invasion that's underway. And this is where you see the first bug that picks up a guy and just rips him in half. And it's kind of like the Dread podcast and the pedestrian got mowed down. Going to be that kind of movie.
Exactly.
That's the first of many people getting ripped in half over the course of this movie.
Lots of body parts.
Verhoeven loves his graphic violence.
Yeah, that was a cool open to the main character getting attacked. You see people falling. And actually, it says 1 year earlier.
It does, yeah. That's now, weird. That was the first invasion of Klondathu. That was a total clusterfuck.
Right.
Oh, okay, because then they go maybe another year or two.
I think that maybe just one more year. That's right. I think this all takes place within maybe a 2 year period.
Yeah.
From the end of high school.
They can just teleport, but they don't talk about that, I guess.
So after the intro, they cut back to the classroom. And again, I guess you assume this is supposed to be high school, kind of the idea that, you know, you're going out of high school and then going into military service. Michael Ironside, he's in the classroom as a veteran. He's missing an arm, so he previously had service. He's providing some exposition with the idea that at some point there effectively was a military takeover of the country, and it's formed the Federation, and he's just casually talking about and advocating for violence being the ultimate use of force.
This year we explored the failure of democracy, while the social scientists brought our world to the brink of chaos. We talked about the veterans, how they took control and imposed the stability that has lasted for generations since. Naked force has resolved more issues throughout history than any other factor. The contrary opinion, that violence never solves anything, is wishful thinking at its worst. People who forget that always pay.
I mean, he does do some exposition on the civilian versus citizen. As a citizen, you have to join the army to become a citizen to actually get the right to vote.
They were trying to pull a little bit from the book. Because one thing I do remember about the book is lots of classroom discussion.
So let me talk about this, because this is a very indicative scene. If you're looking at the book, is filled with flashbacks to high school, to these debates in the classroom, debates about things like military service and what that means, but also about the other themes in the book. This one is, you know, basically just about exposition and sort of throwing it out there that what does military service mean? And I really listened to what Michael Ironside was saying this time around. He's basically saying that democracy was a failure.
Right.
He said the veterans took control and imposed the stability that's lasted for generations.
Military coup led to a fascist dictatorship.
When you vote, you're exercising political authority. You're using force. Force is violence. And violence is the supreme authority from which all other authority is derived. These are not the same things that go on in the book. I just want to point that out. Let's be very clear about that. That's not such this focus on violence. Naked force has resolved more issues throughout history than any other factor. This is really driving home this point.
It's a very pro-violence narrative.
It's a very Verhoeven narrative.
It is very Verhoeven.
But also you have to remember, this is very dated. I mean, even the book was written in what, the
1959.
Yeah, so it's all pre-Vietnam War. And so it's a time up when service was still considered the honorable thing to do, and we just beat the Nazis, and it's just a lot more kind of respect for the military in that regard of people signing up and going and fighting. It's very different than post-Vietnam. Oliver Stone and Paul Verhoeven would be an interesting dinner conversation.
Well, you know, it would be really interesting to talk to Heinlein if he were still alive, talk to him today with everything that we've seen in terms of, you know, U.S. military interventionism and imperialism and all of that since World War II, and see if he has the same sort of thoughts. He wrote the book as a reaction to Eisenhower imposing the nuclear test ban.
Nuclear testing, yeah.
He basically thought this country was getting soft. So that's why that's what drives a lot of the themes in the book. Again, Verhoeven latched onto like one little thing and just went nuts.
He hit the afterburners on it.
Very different era than modern day.
Although watching this movie now, it's a little bit scary. That's all I'm going to say.
Worried about bugs?
Not about bugs.
About the fact that we're drifting this direction as a country?
A little bit.
After the classroom, there's a quick review where everyone, I guess, has gone through a placement scoring exercise, math and all that kind of stuff. And they go out and they look. And
I do like how public that all is.
So Doogie Himmler, Neil Patrick Herrick, is able to take Rico's score and like blow it up on the screen so everybody can see it. So a little bit of a dick move there.
Well, this guy will end up being an SS colonel, right?
Well, do you remember the ASVAB test that we took in high school? Remember that? The military placement test?
The Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, I think is what it's called.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Nice job on the acronym, dude. Because I remember what I did on that one. When I took my test, I apparently did fairly well, and I checked, I would like to be contacted by a recruiter from all four military organizations, and then I put Andy McGowan's contact information on the top of my form when I turned it in. And I kid you not, man, they dogged him for a while.
That's funny.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not surprised at all.
You should watch Firebeards before, and then he might have signed up.
The inspirational Nick Cage helicopter film?
That's the one.
Yeah, okay. There is a brief scene where they want to let you know that Carl, so that's the Neil Patrick Harris character, has some psychic ability. So he's doing a quick psychic test with Rico, and then he's able to mentally control the ferret that he has to go attack his mom. So I guess the only reason that scene is there is because they're trying to show you that Neil Patrick Harris has some limited psychic ability, which comes back at the end. Otherwise, not overly used within the movie.
Yeah, in fact, in the book, I think probably one of the only things that they do is they keep character names.
Yeah.
I think Carl dies at some point. He was a psychic, but I don't think any of that stuff came into play. Also, Dizzy dies in the very first chapter, I think, and Dizzy is not a girl. In fact, Carmen is a girl, but she just happens to be a girl from high school who is a pilot, and that's about it. I mean, these are not major characters. But
I also believe that Rico, the main character, is a native Argentinian as opposed to like Casper Van Dien being dropped into Argentina.
Exactly. Well, also of Filipino descent.
They're all supposed to be from Buenos Aires.
So what Verhoeven said that he was doing there is he was actually trying to say that effectively these were the descendants of the Nazis that fled to Argentina after the war.
Oh.
That's why he had all of them be
curious
with white with blue eyes and all that. That was the message he was trying to send there.
Interesting. Okay. Well, this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean,
oh my lord,
the whole Aryan fascist thing, there was something in the 40s I recall. It all kind of ties it together. And
how much of this shit did he just make up after the movie came out?
What's really interesting about that is I went back to try to find some of the earliest interviews with him, because my take on this movie originally, not paying close attention to it, was that he shifted his own interpretation of what he was trying to do after the fact as a way to cover his ass. Like, I thought that was the originally what happened.
Yeah.
But after doing more research, I'm like, it was genuine. He was going for it right from the beginning.
I'm still not convinced, because when the movie came out, they never said any of this stuff. They never said like, oh, you missed it, it's a satire. Like, they were very quiet about it. Oh, it's a Triumph of the Will. It's a Leni Riefenstahl. And he could have just done that. Oh, no, it was very much intentional.
When you look at this movie now, it's so over the top. I'm like, okay, there has to be something there, because you can't make this movie unless you're really leaning into the satire.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'd probably say yes.
So RoboCop and the fact that Ed Neumeier was the screenwriter, that definitely is one mark in the it was intentional category.
So yes, I'll say it was all intentional, but was it supposed to be a satire?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Or was it just intentionally making this a fascist society and all this stuff, but not with the intent of having it be satirical?
No, look at all the propaganda films, all the commentary, like all of it. Like, it's very much a satire.
And this whole movie has a very kind of like plastic sheen to it. And it has like a, there's a weird design aesthetic through this entire movie. It's all, you know, bright and I don't know. It's very, it's strange. Some of the stuff that is in this movie, it looks like it was lifted out of late 70s sci-fi.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that Verhoeven's sci-fi is really kind of clunky.
It's clunky, yeah.
And it's not particularly futuristic.
But is that intentional? That's my question.
I don't know. I just thought he just doesn't have very good production designers. You know, like when they're at the end and they're getting on the escape pods, escaping from the Roger Young.
Yeah.
And those escape pods, they just basically look like some ride out of Disneyland.
Right, totally.
It's really kind of crappy effects.
But for satire, when they're doing one of the federal films, they have like bug attacking a cow, and then they have like the censored over it.
Hilarious.
But you still see the blood. You see the blood flying everywhere. Oh, it's so funny.
The very next scene is the Mormon outpost. The carnage. And you see like, they don't censor any of the body parts. Like, not at all.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know it's a satire.
All right.
You know he's going for it. Like, it's not.
I mean, that's a very good specific example there where I think that you can put that one mark again in the yes, it was intended category.
All right.
Yeah.
They show a quick football game, or not football. I don't know what this, I mean, it's kind of like football on a very short field.
It's indoor. It's like arena football.
It's like flip ball.
It's like arena football.
It's arena flip ball, whatever that is. It's the Buenos Aires Tigers against the Giants.
I'm curious to see if like Odell Beckham will try that, get free coverage by doing a flip. Over the cornerbacks.
What the fuck, man? Like, that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Whatever this sport is, like, I don't know. I mean, are there trampolines in the floor? I'm a little bit unclear as to what exactly the rules of this sport are.
Also, they're not playing on grass. It's basically like concrete or wood. How are they not destroying their knees?
I think we could probably move on from the game.
Let's move on from the game. Which
I think the only interesting part about the game was they do set up a little bit. Diz was, I think, the quarterback, the leader of the game. So they do use that later in the invasion.
Yeah, I mean, it's foreshadowing, like teamwork, and you know the little Rico, you know, jump and double flip comes in to play later in the boot camp and all this. So yeah, whatever.
Mostly it was goofy.
So Xander is introduced as.
Oh, that's right. He's on
the romantic
team.
Triangle with Carmen. And so he's the, I think, is he the quarterback? Or I don't know. He's playing on the other side of the team. Doesn't really matter.
He's a receiver. He's
arch enemy on the other team.
Yeah.
Cornerback slash receiver.
Yeah. But from here, then they go to a dance. It's a weird looking dance. But what's funny about this is so Diz is there. Carmen's there. So everybody's there. But they have Diz looking at Rico, and this is where she has like the crazy eyes and she's all hyper, and it's just a very strange energy.
She's stalking him.
She's a full-on stalker. She's a stage 5 clinger.
I'm looking all over for you. I gotta get out of here pronto. I got a stage 5 clinger.
I need more time.
Did you hear what I just said to you? Stage 5 virgin clinger. Let's go. I'm gonna start the car. I'm serious. Let's go.
So but Rico only has eyes for Carmen, and Carmen lets Rico know that they're finally going to do it tonight, so that goes down.
Let me give a little bit of advice, Johnny Rico. If you're looking to do it, go with Dizzy, because she's ready. You don't have to wait around for her.
They then all decide that, yes, they're going to join federal service, and they go and they get their assignments.
I was going to say, I love when he's signing up for the mobile infantry. I don't even know what that guy is. The recruiter?
Yeah, or he's taking paperwork, and he goes,
Yeah.
Mobile infantry like, made me the man I am today.
Exactly. He's like missing a leg, his arm. He's got
no legs. And his I have no legs, and my arm can double as a can opener.
Rico, before he leaves, he tells his parents that he's going to join. They're not happy with him. So he was supposed to go to Harvard, and he's cut off, and he walks out. But what's really great about this scene is he ends up meeting Carmen, and they're saying goodbye. They may not see each other again. And he says, I love you. And he wants her to say it back just to try it on for size. And all she can really muster is, I love you.
He's like basically, it's like pulling teeth to get her to say, I love you.
I guess I fucking love you. I guess, I don't know. Let's just assume you're not going to see each other again. You're probably going to die. Why not just hit him with a full on I love you? Come on. Harsh.
Well, she is harsh.
The other thing that I liked about this is then she gets on a So she gets on a transport that's going to take her to wherever she's going when she departs. And the thing goes from 0 to 100 in like 2 seconds. She would be liquefied against the back wall of that thing based on G-forces. So I did like that. That's an example of where the effects work in this movie. It almost looks purposefully bad. I don't know. It's weird.
I think they just didn't have the right crew working on it. It's also 1997, so it's a little bit before. I guess that's not a good enough excuse. Jurassic Park was that 93, right?
Yeah.
Should have been able to do better.
The effects in this movie are uneven at best.
Yeah, I do wonder how much of that is a choice.
The bugs are cool. The bugs actually look really good. Not when they interact with people, but when they're by themselves, they look pretty cool.
I don't really know that I love the design of those bugs, actually.
I always wonder, like, where's the head? Where's the mouth?
Where's the body?
It doesn't...
It's strange.
Yeah, it is strange, but it's...
It's central, right? That Doogie shows his how to destroy him.
The brainstem.
By the way, Carl, he missed his calling. He should have been in the mobile infantry because he knows
he's
a much better shot than your regular mobile infantry soldier.
3 shots he's taking down a bug. And then usually most mobile infantry, it's like 5 guys shooting randomly and they may or may not take it down.
Yeah.
The effectiveness of the weapons is variable throughout the movie. Yeah. There's 100 or 50 soldiers shooting and the bugs just overrun them. And then at the end when they're in the cave... There's only 2 of them, and they're keeping like 30 of them at bay, no problem. So it's kind of strange. By the way, just the base weaponry in this movie and the idea that you put these little tiny, little caliber weapons against this invading army of bugs, it looks goofy as shit. The scale of it is completely off.
Yeah. Well, I just don't understand why they never nuked the planet from orbit.
Why even go there in the first place?
Why land? Why not just like soften it all up with...
Apparently, what Verhoeven was also trying to go for was that you need a war to fight, right? So the idea that they're actually going out and picking the fight so that they can actually complete continue the military-industrial complex and be in a constant state of war. So I think that was a little bit of what he was trying to comment on.
Yeah. But it was also, the stated thing was that humans had gone into the bugs' territory, the arachnid territory, and so the arachnids started sending out asteroids aimed at Earth.
Yeah, they're defending themselves. It's a commentary on colonization.
It's constantly, space is the new frontier. It's all about survival. It's kill or be killed, ultimately. And it's just this perpetual war.
Rico and Ace and then Diz ends up showing up at the same place where he's going through training. And this is where you have Clancy Brown as Sergeant Zim. So he's responsible for training. And just Clancy Brown just lights up the screen. It's just, I'm a Clancy Brown fan, so it's fun to just see him in anything.
I love that first intro with him challenging the recruits. Who here has what it takes to knock me down? Some guy comes up and just gets his arm broken immediately.
Right.
It's my arm. I think it's broken. You think it's broken?
it appears to be pointing at a 45-degree angle in the wrong direction, so I think it is broken.
How many times did he yell medic?
I was going to say, so that is one thing that's kind of funny, is there's a repeated joke of where they keep injuring their soldiers during training, and they just yell, medic! So Ace is complaining, like, why do I need to know how to throw a knife? And so
I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah. Zim has him put his arm on the wall and then just basically puts a knife straight through it. So apparently their healing technology must be pretty good, because otherwise they're not going to be abusing their own soldiers this way.
It definitely is. But then Zim goes, the enemy cannot push a button if you disable his hand.
Right.
Medic!
Medic!
It's fantastic.
Zim's great.
So this cuts to one thing that I guess was kind of, at the time, controversial, which is there's a co-ed shower scene.
Oh, it was not controversial when I saw it.
Female and male soldiers are showering together, and Dina Meyer was questioning why they had to be naked. And so she said, Verhoeven, like, why don't you get naked? And he did it. He and the cinematographer stripped nude to film the scene.
Yeah, I thought that was a boss move to say, if we have to do it, then you have to direct it naked. And he's like, okay.
Yeah, right. And he did it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, funny.
And you can find multiple quotes from Verhoeven all over the place to say that he doesn't understand the American obsession with nudity versus violence. Everyone's far more sensitive to seeing someone nude than seeing people completely blown apart, decapitated, etc. And he's right.
He's totally right. Yeah. And that's it's always been that way.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's the main purveyor of violence in movies in the 1990s.
Just watch the Total Recall, like the scene where Arnie has the guy on the... on the escalator, and he's using a human shield.
Oh, right.
That's about as Verhoeven as it gets. Rico basically gets a Dear John letter from, she's somewhere outside of Jupiter, And then she says, you know, we're already thousands of miles apart. So then she just dumps him.
With a goofy smile.
Yeah, with a big smile. I think this is best for both of us. Smile.
In front of the whole squad, too.
Right.
As he's getting dumped, they're all like turning their back and slowly walking away. Like, ooh.
Like, oh, this guy's having a rough go of it. So then from here, it cuts to Carmen, and she's all excited because she has a chance to fly one of the big ships. And she does this crazy run through the station. Like, she's flying through corridors, like really tight corridors for no reason whatsoever. And the effects on that scene are really bad. Is this purposefully bad, or is it just they didn't put the dollars behind it? I don't really know.
I don't know, but all I wanted to know is why this space shuttle needed wings.
So the space shuttle had wings. The other thing is that they are launching themselves from what appears to be a base that circles the entire moon. That'd be a pretty big accomplishment from a construction standpoint.
I'd say that's impressive.
Yeah. She's able to take the ship out, and she's a hotshot pilot. So she's flying this, you know, what they say, like 55 million ton ship. Someone says it at some point. It's big. She's going kind of wild. She's waiting to detach the umbilicals until the very last second. And then she's within 3 meters as she's pulling it out. Are they really going to let her do this as a trainee? I think that they would probably have the reins a little bit tighter.
No, I think they would, because they said, like, hey, like, you hit something and there goes your license. Yeah.
And millions of dollars worth of equipment or whatever.
Did Xander specifically ask to be her instructor because she is, quote, a little wild on the stick?
I think that's what he was hoping for.
I think that's what he was hoping for.
Well, let me ask you this. Did they get together over the course of this movie? They must have, right?
I thought so, oh, yeah. Right?
Definitely. I think so.
Okay. When they're on the bridge and they're taking the ship out, two things that are said, prepare for warp and ready number one. So I'm just kind of wondering, who was watching Star Trek The Next Generation? Was it Ed Neumeier?
They're writing it.
I'm surprised they called it warp, but...
It's an easily understood term
popularized by Star Trek, because it's, yeah, you know, like warping space and, you know, for hyperspeed or whatever. And then, of course, like, you know, number one and number two, those are old nautical terms. Next Generation just happened to bring it back.
All right, fair enough. So then it cuts back to Rico's training. So Rico was at one point promoted to squad leader, and then he's given the task of taking the team out for when they're going to do some live ammunition training.
Bad idea. Like, why do you want to do a live
ammunition? And not only that, but this is like the stupidest obstacle course I've ever seen in my life. It's like the things that pop up are like really slow moving, about the size of a mannequin, and yeah, they're getting mowed down. One guy, his helmet comes off, and then Rico takes off his helmet, and then he gets shot in the head. And of course, they yell medic, and I'm not sure what the medic is going to do, because the entire half of the dude's head is gone, and there's just a big pile of brains. So I guess the medic's going to run over and like scoop the brains back in and then duct tape his skull together. I don't really know.
Yeah, that was pretty, it was a brutal one.
And for that, Rico has to undergo administrative punishment, which is basically means he gets bullwhipped in the base square.
I was glad to see that flogging hadn't gone out of style.
Did they do something in the book too? I forget.
This is definitely from the book, because part of the moral decline argument is that Heinlein advocates for corporal punishment and capital punishment. I mean, at least those are parts of this society as a way to combat juvenile delinquency. And so it's also been part of military tradition to have both corporal and capital punishment. This fits in well.
So Carmen and Xander flying through space, and all of a sudden they get this alert that there's an asteroid right in front of them. Apparently on every space battleship, there is a break glass in case of asteroid thing that you have to hit with your hand, and then you have to hit a button.
What the fuck was that?
I saw that, the same thing.
This is the most asinine thing I've ever seen. And the other thing that's great is the asteroid's right in front of them. The two people flying the ship, they do a 6 or 7 second countdown before they start an evasive maneuver, which I don't understand.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I didn't understand the breaking a glass to do an evasive maneuver. Like, none of that made sense at all. It was weird.
They dive the ship down. They break off an entire section. It's like someone gives an order. It's like, close off section 21. So a bunch of people in section 21 are fucked and they're dead. But the end result of this is Carmen has a big smile on her face. Denise Richards, big smile. Everyone's happy.
Smiles all around, everyone.
And the score is uplifting. And the tone and the score here is way off. It's pretty funny. The captain of the ship is, we have a hell of a flight team. And she's all happy too. Yeah,
it's just like, whoa.
What's going on? I have no idea. The meteor passes them, or asteroid, whatever you want to call it, and they can't communicate because apparently their communication device was in the section that got sheared off the ship. Then Rico is calling home with his parents because he's going to leave after he gets his lashes. He's going to take off, and as he's talking to his parents, there's some great dialogue because they're like, The sky is getting dark.
Is that rain?
That doesn't generally happen on Wednesdays.
That's unseasonably rainy.
We love you, son.
Oh, my, what's that?
Looks like rain.
This time of year?
Sure is dark.
Your transmission has been terminated due to atmospheric interference.
His parents do remind me of like the parents from Better Off Dead or something like that. Or like,
oh my gosh, that's a good comparison, yeah, actually. That's funny.
Very, very goofy.
Maybe it's raining. It's an asteroid.
It's raining asteroids.
Smashes into Buenos Aires and then totally destroys it. One note of trivia on that is some of the footage that they showed during the movie itself was actually the Oakland Fire. So they went around and they got some footage from the Oakland fires and used that in the movie, which I thought was kind of interesting. They show the aftermath of Buenos Aires being attacked. And one of the things they choose to show is a smashed dog.
Oh, that important. Well, hey, Verhoeven, he doesn't give a fuck. He's going to show dead people and dead animals. No problem.
It's like a golden retriever that has a large piece of cement on top of it that is smushed. So, poor dog. Rico, he ends up being reinstated because everyone gets excited. They're going to war against the bugs. Everybody's doing their part. And so one thing it does is it cuts back to the federal network and you see kids stomping on bugs and there's a mom there that's watching them do it and she's nearly orgasmic. It's a very weird moment. It's so weird.
Yeah, they're like smashing cockroaches. Totally unrelated to the bugs invading them, but
yeah.
Did anyone watch the credits to see if no cockroaches were harmed in the filming of this movie?
Oh, I don't know. They might have been harmed.
Because I think they were harmed. I'm pretty sure.
It really does look like they were harmed, yes.
Yeah.
But apparently, I believe that the trivia note said that they did not kill them.
But the dog they killed.
Yeah. This begins to bring together Carmen as the flight team and Rico, so his unit. They go out to Station Ticonderoga, which is going to be their staging area for the first invasion of Clendathu. Rico does run into Carmen and Xander, and the situation between Xander and Rico escalates quickly. They get into a fight, and Xander says, rank is not an issue here. So he goes to take off his jacket, and then he gets sucker punched by Rico.
A little cold clocks him.
Just absolutely sucker punched laid out. But then Xander, to his credit, flips Rico onto the table and then drops like two or three elbows right to the solar plexus very savagely. It's a pretty funny fight, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Xander more than handles himself against somebody who is a trained mobile infantryman, which I think is pretty impressive.
Plus, the whole time they're fighting to the song Fade Into You by
Mazzy Star. Yeah, Mazzy Star, still popular in the year 2173, apparently.
What?
It's just so weird.
What? This is my comment. Why? Why is that song appropriate for this violent fight? I just don't understand it. I'm going like, wait, is that Fade Into You?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? It's like so weird.
It's a very odd pairing of action and musical choice. They start the first Clendathu invasion, and they show up. And this is another thing that I like, because all these battleships are hovering above the planet, and you see these plasma charges that bugs are firing that are heading towards them. As a moviegoer, you're watching this and saying, holy shit, that looks pretty heavy. It looks like it's coming right towards the ship. Commander of the ship says, nope, the military intelligence said it's going to be light and scattered or whatever it is. And then, of course, the ship's just going to start taking part.
Someone made a mistake.
One thing I did like about this is there is a line of dialogue that I'll just note that the inflection for this to work has to be perfect, because the line of dialogue is steady as she goes number two.
Oh, boy.
But, of course, it's actually pronounced, or it's in, the inflection is steady as she goes number two. Yes, juvenile, but made me laugh. They do land, and so their plan of attack is...
Did they have a plan?
Yeah, I know.
The military strategy in this is so stupid. I mean, they just basically send a bunch of people running towards insects that are 10 times their size, faster, and they give them these low-caliber weapons. The fighting in this, how they attack the bugs and all that, it just looks stupid every time you see it.
The good thing is, even though they're low-caliber weapons... They have unlimited ammunition, so that's never a problem.
Right.
So they have that on their side.
I particularly liked the one soldier who runs out in front of his squad and starts firing and taking on the arachnids all on his own. And I'm just going, dude, no one else can fire because you're in front of them. They're going to shoot you. They're going to kill you.
No one does a good job of holding their position. So they casually are firing shoulder-mounted nukes. So I'm kind of wondering, how did they resolve the radiation problem?
I was wondering the exact same thing. In the book, they do that. They use these small nukes and they shoot them down the bug holes and stuff. Bug holes is what I said, by the way.
Thank you for the clarification.
In the book, they've got powered armor, right?
Right.
Oh, so they have radiation protection?
That's my assumption. Right.
Yeah.
These guys, they're not going to be like living past 29 if they actually make it through this battle, because they can die of radiation poisoning.
And they're firing nukes on the surface at one point. Like, they fire a nuke at one of the tanker bugs. Handheld nukes are going off left and right here.
They should have been using more nukes, because they actually seem to be pretty effective against the arachnids. You know, there's one scene at the end where they use a nuke in the tunnel. How are they not killed?
Right.
Like, it makes no sense. Why do you even call them nukes? They're just some big bombs. That's all they are.
Yeah.
I thought it was convenient that Klondathu also has a proper environment that they can breathe in, and it's not a problem at all.
That's true, actually. Apparently that was Wyoming, by the way. That was some of the shooting sequences were there.
I think that for the atmosphere to support these giant insects, they would have to be extremely oxygenated. What would happen if you're just a regular human in an atmosphere that was like mostly oxygen?
This might be a good time for you to tell the real DMC community about your side hobby as an entomologist.
Sorry, I've read up some things about how with Jurassic Park.
With the dinosaurs the size?
Yeah, you really couldn't bring the dinosaurs back because there's not enough oxygen in the atmosphere to actually support them.
Right.
Creatures like that big, like in order to have insects that large, you would have to have super saturation of oxygen.
They do get their ass kicked. That's how I'd summarize this first invasion.
Ace was squad leader at the time, and so he freezes up, doesn't know what to do. And so Rico takes charge. I did like the brilliant plan that Rico had. Kill them! Kill them all! That's it. And then 5 minutes later, they retreat.
There's absolutely no evidence of military tactics on display at any point. Nobody establishes like a good firing position. No one's really giving orders to do much of anything.
What's their actual objective?
Shoot bugs, I guess.
Just shoot bugs. It's just like, go down and shoot bugs.
Right.
It seems pretty stupid.
By the way, that was also something that Verhoeven said he was doing intentionally. You spend trillions of dollars on creating this huge military industrial complex, and all it's good for is to shoot bugs.
Yeah.
So that was the angle he was taking.
So now we get to see the opening scene, but from a totally different perspective. And then you get to see the reporter, right?
Yeah, get ripped in half.
Ripped in half. All I'm wondering is, because you see his cameraman, so this is supposed to take place 700 years in the future, and yet they haven't figured out how to reduce the size of a video camera.
Right.
It's so funny watching today and then looking back at movies that are set like way in the future, and you're just like, okay, what? why did they get that wrong?
Missed that one. So Rico is injured. Rico takes an insect leg through his own leg, so he's hurt pretty bad. All of the ships that were part of the invasion are limping back to Ticonderoga Station. This is one thing that I loved, is you have a bunch of ships that are in space that are connected to the dock and sitting on the dock, and they're all on fire because they're just burning in space.
So. I know, right? It's like, and there was one there. Come on, you did not get that thing back to base. That's basically junk. That half the ship was on fire.
There's going to be a lot of ships that are just simply totaled when it comes to the insurance process here. No one's going to want to rebuild them.
We totaled it. Sorry.
Here's a great moment of acting, right? So Carmen
and,
comes
and writing.
Carmen comes into the station, right? So she's walking through the station, and there are just people that are just mangled everywhere, just missing limbs.
Oh, it is like...
There's a guy screaming as if his leg was just torn off. So,
right?
You figure that it was like a couple weeks of travel to get back there, and no one thought to put a tourniquet or bandage this guy's leg because he's holding it, screaming, and like blood squirting out. Did he not receive any triage or medical care over the past previous weeks from coming back from Klondathu?
Yeah, it looked like the worst MASH unit ever.
Yeah,
like
it was just awful. Yeah, I was wondering, like, did they not give them any medical care until now? What's going on here? So she walks over to this huge board of casualties, right? All these soldiers killed, right? And she actually says, it's strange. There's almost no wounded at all. And I'm like, look around you! What the fuck?
Rico, obviously, not dead. And what Rico is he's in a Bacta tank from The Empire Strikes Back. That's what this is, right? I mean, He's underwater being healed, just like Luke Skywalker in Empire Strikes Back. I do have a question, though. So they're repairing his leg. And so to repair his leg, they have to submerge his entire body. Explain that one to me.
It looked cool.
Yeah, it looked cool.
It was fun. They can come up and say, ha ha, you've been killed in action.
It was a nice scene. Dina Meyer's good in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. She kisses the tank, the side of the tank. So, and apparently, so Casper Van Dien could not see them, understandably, when he was underwater. But think about that. That must be very stressful to be healing in a situation where you got to make sure you're breathing constantly because you're underwater. That's high stress.
Ironically, it should be low stress.
True. A new Sky Marshal is appointed. And their plan now is to begin cleaning out the outer systems as opposed to going right for the home world. And so in this case, it's Planet P they're going to go attack.
I did like after they replaced the Sky Marshal, they went to a talk show and they had like a little interchange. And it reminded me of terrorist hostage terrorist.
A study in duality.
Definitely.
I liked it because it was totally like Fox News. If you had the conservatives and the liberals yammering at each other.
I actually got a little bit of Kentucky Fried Movie. Oh, blow it out your ass. So Rico, Diz, and Ace, they all end up joining a unit known as the Roughnecks. And it's Radchak, so their teacher from school. It's Radchak's Roughnecks.
Oh, who's the lieutenant? It's actually Mr. Raftjack, who's now Lieutenant Raftjack. And now he's got a powered prosthetic arm to replace the missing arm that he had back in the classroom. I wanted to mention this earlier when we're talking about the classroom scene, but Jesus Christ, like that was the worst prosthetic I've ever seen. You could totally tell that his arm was tied behind his back. He looked very, very awkward. It was like really bad.
Right.
And again, yeah. I wonder, either Verhoeven's going for something, this is very much intentional, or he's loyal to his production people and they're just not very good.
Don't know.
I don't know. I couldn't stop staring at his arm in that classroom scene.
The other thing I was thinking about is, so he has his prosthetic hand, but the veteran that was helping them when they were checking in, he doesn't get prosthetic legs. So what's that about?
You know, the guy sits in a chair all day, so he doesn't really need to work.
You don't need legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but come on, man. He should get some legs. So they end up attacking Planet P. They end up having another shootout with the bugs. I sent you guys the screenshot of this, but one of the fantastic moments of military strategy is there is a scene where you see them all standing in a circle shooting bugs. So they're basically shooting in a circle across from each other. So this is a good example of the fantastic military strategy that's at play here.
It just, yeah, it boggles the mind.
You see a guy who's shooting a bug up close, gets all this green fluid all over his face, and it's like squirting on him.
It's bug juice.
That's Jillian.
Lots of bug juice, lots of stuff squirting, and lots of fluids going through the air.
That was a fun scene that I think Diz would tell him to like settle down, shot it a couple more times.
Yeah, open it up on it, yeah. You see a new creature that shows up called the tanker bug, and it's really kind of strange because it's this huge beetle-looking thing, and it has a big mouth, but then it has these two antennas, and it shoots either acid or some sort of fire acid or something out of those antennas. But you have Rico run and take a jump on the back of this thing, and this is where the CGI and the effects are...
That was terrible.
It makes no sense, because he's able to stand on the back, and somehow, as this thing is rocking back and forth, he just sticks there.
I know. Amazing balance. He's an athlete. He's got amazing balance. Have you not seen him on the whatever ball court that is?
Yeah, jump ball, whatever it was. But yeah, so he blows a hole in the back of this thing, and then, again, another nuke, drops a nuke into the back of the...
Was it a nuke? I think it's just a grenade.
I think that was just a grenade.
That was a grenade.
Oh, okay. That was just a grenade. Okay. So he blows it up. That whole scene is so weird looking and stupid.
I don't know. I liked seeing the bug spray fire stuff under the napalm.
Like shooting napalm was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Napalm. That's a good way to think about it.
Seeing your arm disintegrate in front of you. Like, that was just awful.
Well, I do like the creature design of the tanker bug, actually. I think the tanker bug looks cool. It's probably the best looking.
They missed on the CGI for that one, for sure. It was not good special effects.
Then this is where Rico begins his rapid ascent through the military ranks, because he is promoted to corporal on the spot because the old corporal died. Colin referenced this earlier, but there's a scene where they bring beer and...
The entertainment.
He opens this canister that has a combination of footballs. I think there might be like a soccer ball in there. There's the weird violin that you mentioned. I do think that Michael Ironside has a pretty good spiral, because he turns and throws a football and it looks like it goes pretty far.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a good arm.
And I think he did it with his mechanical hand.
Oh, he might have. Yeah, I think he did it with his mechanical hand. You're right. So
that's pretty impressive.
Kudos to you on the spiral iron side. As the entertainment is happening, so they're having some beer, Ace grabs the violin, and everybody knows how to square dance, or some version of square dancing.
Yeah, it was a very strange...
Like, everybody's suddenly doing the exact same dance routine in the back. I don't know. It's just, I thought that was kind of funny.
Hey, square dancing, it's really big in the future.
Diz comes along and is, again, trying to pick up on Rico, you saw all these people get slaughtered today. You don't know if you're going to get off the planet. And Rico still wants nothing to do with Diz. What is Rico's problem? Why is he such an asshole to Diz? I don't understand.
He was in love with Carmen and he's like just fixated on that.
Right. But Carmen already dumped him. That was a year ago. She's right there. I mean, come on, Rico. Make your move.
He does. He does. Finish it out.
And there is a pretty funny moment because so Rico and Diz end up in a tent together. And then she goes to take off her t-shirt and it somehow gets stuck over her eyes. And there's a weird kind of 50 Shades of Grey moment there for a second where she's keeping her, she's blindfolded and...
It's like 9.5 weeks or something. I found it to be quite erotic.
Really? Did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought it was a nice moment. Cool.
I thought it was kind of stupid.
It's pretty sexy. Well, maybe I just like blindfolds. I don't know.
Okay, well, you know, hey, no judgment. So then she does to him what he did to Carmen, right? So she says, I love you, Johnny. And his response is nothing. It doesn't give her anything. It's like,
yeah,
all right, you love me?
Unrequited love.
That's cool. He should have at least dropped an I know.
Of course, Raftchat comes in, interrupts them.
It's time to move out.
Time to move out. Finds out that, oh, that's Dizzy under there, under that blanket. But basically, he's like, you know, you got like 20 minutes. So, yeah, don't worry about it. Rico says, 20 minutes? You think we can do that? And she's like, yeah, let's go. And I'm thinking, you know, Rico hasn't been laid since high school. I think I'm going to give him about 5 minutes.
20 minutes is going to be more than enough.
Yeah, I think so.
They do roll out and Radchak asks his sergeant to go up and take some high ground to try to establish communications. And that guy promptly gets his head lopped off by a flying bug, which is kind of funny.
There's a couple of people getting their heads lopped off.
Oof. They got razor wings or something.
Yeah. So Rico is promoted to sergeant because of that. Here's a kind of a rule of thumb. If you are in a unit with Rico and you are higher in rank, it's best to keep your head down and stay out of combat as much as possible because you are going to die. Rico is bad luck for his superior officers. Then they come upon an outpost that had been set up, slaughtered bodies everywhere. The bugs had already attacked it and overrun it. They find a general that's hiding in the cabinet. The lieutenant says, hey, Rico, you should come take a look at this. And there's somebody who's slumped over a communication panel. And then he asks,
what does that look like to you, Rico?
Looks like a bug was in his brain, sir.
They sucked his brains out.
The whole bugs eating their brains to understand them and control them just seems so bizarre. I don't think it works that way.
How do we understand the human mind? By ingesting it, of
Let's
course.
Eat it.
Their brains.
Delicious.
I don't know.
Maybe the arachnids are actually zombies.
Also, this outpost that they set up, it looks like it's made of...
Tinker toys?
I was going to say tinfoil and a combination of some very thin sheet metal. I mean, it looks like
it'll fall apart very, very easily, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't survive 2 minutes in this thing. It's a pretty shitty base, honestly. They end up figuring out that they're actually there and they're sitting ducks.
It's a trap.
You know, it was a trap. And just like...
It's a trap!
And there is a good shot of where they go up and they look over the wall and you see the insects that are massing and swarming towards them. And at that point, honestly, that fight's over in 45 seconds. If you have that many of those bugs coming towards that thing, forget it. You're dust. It's over.
I do love the line from Ratchet then, though. Come on, you apes. You want to live forever? Rallying cry. And like, no, you're not going to live forever. That's a good
one. So the bugs begin attacking the base. While the attack is underway, the score beat is almost a direct lift from the end of RoboCop. It is almost exactly the same. In fact, I might have to go back and pull those two pieces of music and compare them because they're super similar.
Who did the music?
Basil
Poledouris.
Yeah. Poledouris. Did he do it for RoboCop too?
I think so.
Sounds so similar. So a tanker bug comes up through the center of the base. Diz is able to pull a grenade and throw it exactly into the bug's mouth.
She's the quarterback.
Oh, she's a quarterback. You're right. Actually, okay, I'll give you that. Good point. But she ends up getting a couple legs through her body, which affect her, but don't affect Carmen later in the movie. We can talk about that in a little bit. So Dina Meyer, she's on the ship that's being evacuated. And of course, it was Carmen and Xander that came down. You do see Xander, by the way, get out and he has his rifle and he's taking a few shots at the bug. Very
this
dramatic.
This dude, he's got it all.
Xander's doing a pretty good job. I'll give him that. But Dina Meyer as Diz, her death scene, she's really going for it. That's what I'll say about that sequence. It's Johnny.
Johnny, I'm dying. Dying.
No, you're gonna be all right, Diz.
It's all right. Because I got to have you. Johnny, don't let me go. Don't.
I was hoping for some blood bubbles, but I don't think we got that.
These war scenes, this is what I was saying earlier, that the tone is kind of just weird. Earlier, like, okay, it's satire and kind of goofy and just, it's kind of fun. These, you're like, not really sure. Like, is this fun? Is this actually trying to be like a serious war film? It gets a little bit confusing.
But she ends up dying happy because the one thing that she says is, it's okay. Because I had you, Johnny.
I finally got me some Rico. So, I got me some Rico love.
That's all she wanted, man. That's it. That was the ultimate life achievement unlocked. She had Rico. She can go out happy.
Lieutenant Rafchak dies.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets killed by the bugs. Actually, he doesn't. He gets his legs ripped off by the bugs and then tells Johnny to do him in because that's what he wanted. He was, I expect any one of you to do the same. Johnny shoots him right in the heart and kills him, which brings up the question, why in God's name are they wearing all this body armor that doesn't seem to work very well?
Right. Yeah. What is the point of the body armor?
I mean, Jesus.
When they were filming, they had the really thick body armor on. People kept passing out. Jake Busey got heat stroke and he collapsed at one point. There were a whole bunch of actors. And so I guess if you're watching the movie, and I didn't see this, but this was in the notes for the trivia. Apparently, halfway through the filming, they took off. There was a kind of a rubber insert that went up around the neck. And they said, everybody just wear black t-shirts. So there are a bunch of people that are running around with just black t-shirts and the armor over it to try and cool them down. Yeah. Then it does cut to a funeral. And this is where you have, Rico is now devastated by Dizzy's death. Again, he looks at Carmen during the funeral and her response is to smile because that's what, yeah, hey, we're having a good time. You remember when Diz died?
Big smile. I love funerals.
I love a good funeral.
My big question there was, why is Diz the only one that gets a funeral? 100,000 people
died. I was wondering
died,
the same like... thing.
Because if they're doing that ceremony for everybody who's on is on the ship, they'll be doing funerals for a solid year.
Also, is burial in space a real thing? I understand the naval tradition, burial at sea, but that's sort of out of necessity because where are you going to put the bodies? Dump them in the ocean. In space, I think you'd be able to, A, keep the bodies on ice on these huge ships.
Just tell them behind you.
B, there's a lot of space trash out there now. All these coffins in space.
I know, you're flying your ship and then all of a sudden dunk, hit a coffin.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
Oh, God damn it. That's Diz's coffin. So from here.
And in comes the Gestapo.
I was going to say, this is where Neil Patrick Herrick, so Carl, shows up in his full Nazi regalia. It is an SS uniform when you look at it.
That hat is bigger and higher. And
right.
It's just so exaggerated. It's amazing.
So what he says is they are going back to Planet P for another invasion because they want to try to find a brain bug. To defeat the bug, they must understand the bug. Rico is immediately promoted to lieutenant. So I think, what was this, in 2 weeks, he went from
corporal
to lieutenant?
Corporal to sergeant to lieutenant, yeah.
Private to corporal to sergeant to lieutenant.
They're back on the planet. This is where you have Rico, so he's standing in front. And now it's Rico's roughnecks as opposed to Radchak's roughnecks. I mentioned this before, but I do think that Casper Van Dien kind of sells that moment. I liked it.
Oh, he does. He does. Yeah. I totally agree with you. By the end, he's really sort of owning that character.
Yeah, definitely.
The beginning, not so much.
I wonder if that's all intentional then. He's supposed to be green.
I mean, absolutely. Yes. But is he a good actor enough to pull it off? And I think the answer is no.
The Roger Young, piloted by Carmen and Xander, gets hit by some of the bug plasma. You can see those plasma things coming from a long ways away. And those ships are also proven to be incredibly maneuverable at several points during the movie. So,
Something's coming straight for it.
Yeah, pick a lane here.
They're incredibly maneuverable only at the last second.
Right, yeah.
Because apparently when a giant asteroid is in your path, there's nowhere to go. You're in space. There's everywhere to go.
Exactly. Jesus Christ. The Roger Young is hit. I did like the effect shot of the ship when it split in half.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
That was kind of a cool shot. So the captain, Carmen, and Xander are running. And for no reason other than to have it happen, the captain trips and the door comes down and basically severs her in half. So just smashes her flat for no other reason than just one more element of supreme gore.
I think it's because we've all seen this moment in movies before. Oh, God, I'd hate to get trapped under that door, right? It'll cut you right in half. Verhoeven's like, fuck it, I'm going for it.
Yeah,
here's what happens.
whoever was filming Dread maybe took some inspiration from that scene and took it to the next level with the homeless guy. The captain, she has this very dramatic, you know, get out, because she's been crushed by the door. Xander and Carmen jump on this, is this thing supposed to be like a ship-to-ship escape vehicle? Is it supposed to be a ship-to-planet escape vehicle? I don't even know what it is.
I think it's just an escape vehicle,
where are you going, though?
Why the fuck would you go decide you're going to land on the hostile alien planet just to hang out in space for a while until you get picked up?
Jesus. Exactly.
Idiots.
When they land this thing, it crashes all the way down into the interior of the planet. So it crashes all the way through into a cave, basically to get them as close to the brain bug as they can from a plot standpoint.
It's kind of interesting that, they instead of crashing into the mountain, they crash through the mountain into a big cavern inside. That was unexpected.
But the vehicle is fine. It's very durable when it comes to impact. By the way, one other thing on the Roger Young, there are several moments of what I'll call Star Trek, the original series, camera trickery to show that the Roger Young is off balance, because it keeps going diagonal, diagonal, diagonal. everybody's rolling and leaning against one wall,
leaning against the other wall.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. They end up in the cave. I do believe this is probably Denise Richards' worst moment of acting in the entire movie.
That is saying a lot.
They're attacked by the bugs. She is pinned to the floor. So she has an entire leg through her body, through her upper torso. You hear her, she's like, why aren't they killing us?
Hey, at least she didn't smile.
Oh, the delivery of that line, though, is really, really bad. So Rico he's with his squad, and they're on their way to try to capture the brain bug. And he suddenly gets an inkling that Carmen is down a different path. By the way, here's the great thing. He says, I need two volunteers. The two volunteers that come with him are the senior most members of his team. So he basically eliminates his entire command structure to try and go find Carmen. That seems like a bad move.
Yeah.
By the way, so Xander, you see him at one point after the ship lands, they get guns. And then he pulls a knife. So I like that he takes the time to put a knife in his boot. And then he ends up passing the knife to Carmen when they're pinned to the ground by the creatures. And I'm just wondering, it's a knife, really? You're going to use a knife against a bunch of oversized insects?
He could have used two knives.
I think we've firmly established the fact that Xander is a highly experienced and trained military officer. Not only can he command a starship, but he's well-versed in commando tactics, small arms fire. The man can do it all. So put a knife in his hands, and I put him up against 10 bugs.
You might just win the war. Go, Xander. This is where they have the brain bug come out. It has a bunch of eyes, and it has a vagina on its face.
I'm glad somebody went there.
Verhoeven was, is there anything that I recall about Basic Instinct that I would like to replicate in this moment? I'm sensing a bit of a theme with Verhoeven between these two moments. What comes out of the face vagina
is a penis.
It's a proboscis / suction device that gets jammed into Xander's head. And then what you see is a good 30 seconds of brains being vacuumed up the tube into the brain bug's mouth. So
this might be one of the grossest things I've ever seen.
Xander, the brain spike.
It's a little nasty, but Carmen does use her knife to cut said proboscis. And what you have is Rico arrives. This is where, again, with just now two guns, they're able to hold off an entire horde, and he's able to get in and help her escape. But here's the truly fantastic thing about this scene. This is what I really remember about the first time I saw this. So Denise Richards, Carmen, has a leg through her body. She immediately gets up, uses the arm that's closest to where there's a hole through her body to be helped up. And then the next thing you see her, she's hoisting one of these oversized weapons and firing it freely at all these insects. So she was able to take a leg through her body with no apparent real damage taken. So it's just super impressive.
She's amazing.
She must have a healing factor.
She's absolutely amazing.
And not only that, but at the end, she's walking with Carl and Rico and arm in arm. And guess what? She has a huge smile through her face. She's received no medical attention for having an entire bug appendage through her body. But she's just skipping along, smiling. Yeah,
she's got a huge hole in her shoulder.
And she has a hole through her body, about the size of an arm, at least the width of an arm.
She's fine.
I'm not sure if it was the first brain bug or when they're pulling the brain bug out of the caverns. But somebody says, hey, you're some kind of big, fat, smart bug, aren't you? I love that line.
some of the dialogue in this movie is just really bad. And I just wonder, is it purposefully stupid? It has to be in a couple cases, right?
I think so.
I think it has to be. At some point, maybe it was like just during the filming, Verhoeven's like, oh God, I've gone over the edge. Now it's got to be a satire. It's like, I didn't mean for that to happen, but
didn't start that way.
No, I think we gotta
put our foot on the accelerator and just go for it.
I think it's his intention the whole time.
You get to the end of the movie and you're just like, what the fuck is going on? We're like now full on Nazis here.
What happens is they capture the brain bug and there's this funny moment where pulling it out and then the end dramatic moment where Carl, so Neil Patrick Harris, as in his full Gestapo uniform, goes over and he puts his hand on the bug and his psychic impression that he gets is that it's afraid. It's afraid. And everybody cheers and starts, yay, it's afraid.
I mean, he's like, he's got this great look on his face as he's doing basically like a mind meld with the bug. His eyes get really wide. He's like, afraid.
Well, so do you think if you were trapped in a net and surrounded by 500 people that had guns trained on you, wouldn't you be a little bit afraid? Isn't that kind of a natural response?
Yeah, but you know, those brain bugs, they're all just all big pussies.
They have them on their face, at least.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Colin, can you refresh me quickly or refresh us on the, what was the ending of the book? I don't even remember the ending of the book.
I think that the ending of the book, they were going to Planet P to capture a brain bug. It was Operation Royalty, I think it was called. I don't think that they actually... I think the book just ends. Because the book itself is really... It's not about the plot. It's more about discussing these
The ideological debate.
Yeah. It's a very serious book. Hard science fiction, right?
That brings us to a close. So anything else you guys want to throw out there about the film itself?
Just going back to the genesis of this and calling it Starship Troopers and everything. I mean, it very, very high-level plot points. It keeps in, and again, it keeps in some of the character names. Originally, this movie was titled Bug Hunt at Outpost 9.
Right.
Yep, that's about right.
That name matches the movie.
That checks out.
Yep.
That's funny.
And then it was already in production, and then the producers bought the rights to Starship Troopers, because I think it was 10 years after Heinlein's death or something.
Yeah, he
like
died
that.
In 88.
Then it was, oh, okay, let's take our screenplay and adapt elements of the novel. Yeah, so as you can see, this was never going to be Starship Troopers, inspired by maybe, but this is not the novel.
No, this is definitely not the novel. All right, Marcus, anything else from you?
No, I think we covered it.
So Michael Ironside, he had read the book when he was a kid. During the filming, he asked Verhoeven, again, you know, Verhoeven had grown up in Nazi-occupied
Holland, yeah.
He said, why are you doing a right-wing fascist movie? Verhoeven replied, quote, if I tell the world that a right-wing fascist way of doing things doesn't work, no one will listen to me. So I'm going to make a perfect fascist world. Everyone is beautiful. Everything is shiny. Everything has big guns and fancy ships, but it's only good for killing fucking bugs, which is what you had said earlier. Yeah.
Yep. Really good.
It's interesting. Yeah. So yeah, this was his goal from the beginning. I think he pulled it off. I'm just sort of pissed off that the name of the movie is Starship Troopers.
Well, there are a lot of people that say that this is his best movie overall.
I don't agree.
I think I like Total Recall better.
I mean, the movies that we talked about, I think Total Recall is better. And I actually really like Basic Instinct a lot.
Yeah, maybe I need to rewatch that because I just haven't watch seen it in a long time.
I need to see it again, too.
And then at some point, you just got to watch Showgirls.
No.
We should actually do Showgirls. That would be kind of fun.
That can be your pick someday.
Sorry, one last thing about Verhoeven. Apparently, Neil Moritz proposed doing a remake of Starship Troopers, but, you know, I think actually basing it on the novel. Verhoeven expressed skepticism about that, citing reports that it draws heavily from the original fascistic and militaristic 1959 novel. So he's criticizing for that. You're criticizing this about a book that you did not read.
Again, his interpretation was that Heinlein was supportive of this.
He's thinking that Heinlein is supportive of fascism.
Right.
The book is not about fascism. This is my point.
He did not correctly interpret the way people have said that interpreted what Heinlein's original intent was.
Somebody said, oh, it's about fascism. He's like, yay, I get to make a satirical movie about fascism and blame it on Heinlein. Well, fuck you, Verhoeven.
What's the fastest path to put Doogie Howser in a Nazi uniform?
Brilliant casting, by the way.
He was good.
I mean,
that's fantastic.
Talk about it really fucking is. With your expectations.
Neil Patrick Harris is an SS officer. You would not have thought was going to work, but somehow it does within the context of this campy universe.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get to our wrap up. So Colin, anything else you want to do? What's your summary on this?
I think I just summed it up.
All right. Then just throw a letter grade on it.
Letter grade. I'm going to give it a B because it is a fun movie. It's got a lot of fun action. It's also just fucking batshit crazy at points. And so it's highly entertaining. It's not for the satire itself. There's a lot to talk about for this movie. And so because of that, I think it's definitely worthwhile or worthy of saying that it's a good movie. But I wouldn't put it any work beyond that.
Marcus.
And of course, the acting. Some of the acting.
We're using air quotes when you put acting. So the word acting.
Should I give it a B minus just because of Denise Richards' performance? I don't know. We'll just call it a B.
Okay. Marcus.
Yeah, I'd probably give it the same letter grade. I'll give it a B. It is a fun, goofy, kind of crazy action movie. It is entertaining for sure. I'm not sure about message, satire. A lot of it just gets lost in the weirdness. It's definitely not for the squeamish either. So there's lots of violence, just lots of craziness. It's not what you would expect from a movie. And so it's kind of fun in that regard. Just kind of over the top, wacky.
Is this your favorite movie that involves somebody having their brains sucked out through a tube?
Probably. Top three.
This is my point. When you set out to make a satire, I think you're trying to make a statement, yeah. Right? What is this movie's statement?
That's
what
where it gets trying lost. To do?
Because, right, because when you're sucking out brains and you're eviscerating cows, it gets all lost. What's the message? We know Nazis are bad. We know fascism's bad.
There's also some weird messaging around the bugs are just like us and they're trying to understand us. Is he pro-bug? Is he pro-Hitler? Whose side is Verhoeven on in this?
Well, the problem is if you're trying to create this fascist society and say this military-industrial complex is a horrible thing to pursue, but then you make this movie, it's like, yeah, fuck yeah. And then most of your audience interprets it as, yeah, fuck yeah.
But it's also like your enemy is like giant bugs trying to destroy the Earth. It's kind of easy to get behind a military trying to stop bugs from destroying Earth, right?
Destroying the Earth, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also just the immediate reaction of violence. That's instead of trying to understand, oh, well, why are the bugs trying to kill us? Yeah. It's just, let's go to war.
I think that's completely lost in the movie. So
it is completely lost in the movie. Yep.
All right, Marcus, letter grade?
B. Quite fun, but not a great movie, but it's a very fun, enjoyable movie.
It's a B for me. I definitely like this movie a lot more watching it this time than I did previously. I hadn't seen it in a long time. You know, certainly, it's been over 20 years for me. And this was not a movie that I wanted to go back to because my original interpretation, I didn't see it as satire the first time I saw it. So I just walked out of the movie theater thinking, boy, that was really, really bad. And now when I watch it, I can actually appreciate it from a satirical perspective. He does an impressive job in terms of creating this weird plasticky universe and everybody, you know, looks fantastic. It's very bright. The movie's like overly lit, it almost feels like in some cases. And it's just, it's very, you know, slick. So all that I think works really well. The choice of the actors, if it was intentional to put people that maybe weren't going to crush it on the acting front, but they looked really good, if that was his intent, then hey, yeah, you did it really well. But Denise Richards' performance in this movie in particular is terrible. It's really, really bad. Smiling is not acting. So, and it's just, I mean, look at me. It's just, it's terrible. And then of course, that in conjunction with some of the stuff like the logic errors where, you know, she's walking around at the end happy as a clam after she has a arm-sized hole through her body. All that is just really goofy. I liked it a lot more than the first time I saw it because I actually could appreciate it and definitely understand, particularly with understanding that Ed Neumeier was the screenwriter for both this and RoboCop. Now I get it. I see it and can look at it differently and appreciate it differently. All that being said, it's still just kind of a big, loud, stupid movie. So it's fun, but the message is mostly lost, yeah. I think. I think we all know that Nazis are bad. Although at this point in time, maybe America needs a reminder on that. I don't know. Hopefully not.
I'd say yes.
So I'll go to B.
I love how Marcus and I describe this as a fun movie. And it's a movie that has a lot of dismembered corpses in it and a lot of people being torn in half.
It's kind of like the violence is so over the top. It's cartoonish. Yeah,
it is. It is.
It was fun to go back and revisit it. It's a fun movie to talk about because it has that nice combination of deeper philosophical questions with the, you know, what Heinlein was intended. And then you have, you know, Verhoeven taking it and turning it into this camp fest. So it's a weird mashup. I'll leave it at that.
That's for sure.
All right. You guys want to do a movie pick or are we just going to blow that off?
I think my next pick will be Children of Men. I think that'd be a good one. Alfonso Cuarón.
I've wanted to watch that movie again for a while now.
Yeah, that movie has one of the great all-time single shots ever, I think. It's super impressive.
We can thank Andy for helping us pick that movie.
Yeah. So it sounds like we're going to do Children of Men somewhat spontaneously, but maybe we'll move on to that. Generally, what we do is we pick a movie, and then we choose not to do it, and we do something else. So, for example, Starship Troopers, not mentioned before it showed up as a podcast, but whatever.
Yeah, so who actually picked this?
I don't really know. I don't know what happened.
It might have been mine.
I don't know
again.
How we got onto Starship Troopers.
Yeah, so why does Marcus get to pick when I think that he is the one who threw out Starship Troopers?
Could I pick better movies?
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we wrap this for now, and then we'll be back with something quite possibly Children of Men. Otherwise, we'll just do something
Otherwise,
else.
Otherwise, it'll be The Matrix.
Or maybe Halloween.
Yeah,
or Halloween.
It could be anything. Who knows? So stay tuned for the wild ride that is the Real DMC podcast.
Here comes Showgirls.
I'm telling you.
All right. And otherwise, I'll say this is the Real DMC podcast. Signing off. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Come on, you apes. You want to live forever?
I was trying to think of a good Denise Richards line.
She just smiled.
This was really actually very interesting. And I think I always just sort of like, what am I trying to say? No, just cut this out.